live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show this evening.
There, Rob?
Yes. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Water Zone, everybody, and Chris Davies and Ms. Chris Austin. And I hope everybody is getting out a little bit more, but also staying very careful. And welcome to, we're gonna have a great show tonight, so stick around and do that. And we have Ms. Chris Austin, who will be our first guest, and she's going to bring us up to date on all the wonderful things that are happening in California water. So, excuse me for dropping off. The phone just cut off, and I had to redial into everybody. So hope everybody's here.
We wondered where you went.
I was all ready to go, and all of a sudden the phone went dead. And I go, oh, my God, I got to dial in again. So that's where it is.
The intro played, and then there was no Rob.
Oh, well, nothing's perfect in this world, especially me.
Surely not.
I apologize for that, just a little technical problem at this end.
Don't worry.
But hope everybody's doing well. Chris, Davey, what's happening up in California?
We're getting warm, buddy, I tell you. It's been very hot the last few days, but cooling down on the weekend. Looking forward to the 4th of July weekend coming up because it's a long weekend for us.
Do you think that they're canceling a lot of fireworks shows and things, or?
So, City of Claremont, where I live, has just said that they are going to put on their Claremont. They're going to put on the 4th of July firecracker show, which they call it. But there'll be no meeting under the oaks like they usually do, right? And everybody's sitting out and having a picnic and a live band prior to that. So that won't happen. Nor will the 5K. Nor will the food and all the other events that happen during the day. But they will have the fireworks.
Right where I live out here temporarily, they canceled the fireworks event because they were afraid too many people were going to gather to see it in the arena where they have it. So that's gone, and they decided they still have a Christmas tree down in the main street. So, but that's in December. We'll see what happens as we move into that. So,
yeah,
it is what it is.
Everything else aside, everybody's kind of licking their wounds from today's market sell-off.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. But I don't know. I hope everything gets better. I mean, this is affecting everything that we're doing, and there's some serious things going on, even in the water. And I want to bring up the purveyor of Maven's Milk, Ms. Chris Austin. I'm Chris. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. How you doing, Rob?
Hey, I'm Chris. Doing well.
Doing good.
I noticed, I've been reading a lot about these recent cyber attacks, security attacks on water agencies.
Yeah,
Bit more background on that? I'm getting nervous on that and then the electric grid. Because everybody shut us off.
You know, the thing is, when in our businesses, we always have the latest technology. And if, you're working at a firm and you have a slow computer, they come in and they fix it. But the thing is, some of the systems that are in, that these utilities are using, especially if you're a smaller utility and not well financed, I mean, we're talking about older software and, the cost to secure things in an online sense. It's pretty hefty. I will tell you that. Securing my websites and keeping hackers out cost me almost as much as it cost me to host the website on a server. I mean, it's not an inexpensive thing to make sure you're hacker proof. And with older systems, it's a bit of a problem. We in the business world, where you are, your computer gets slow, they fix that. In the state or in these other agencies, utilities, you have to go get approval for that, and it's really hard when critical infrastructure or things that, you know, are that some people might think, you know, perceived to be frivolous, but are really necessary technological upgrades, you know, it's a challenge. And there's a lot of systems out there that are easily hacked, and they can get in there and they can start messing with water deliveries and electrical deliveries, and they can there's a lot of potential for disruption if all of these you know, things are not secured, and it's a big issue, and people have been trying. I can even see it sometimes on my websites, but that's why I have a firewall, a pretty, you know, really good one. But I have seen, you know, 40,000 people trying to, you know, that's one thing they do is they blast the website with so many things, you know.
Try to overwhelm it.
Yeah, and, you know, and they can, and there's a lot of potential for disruption. So, you know, upgrading the technology and upgrading our grids is really, we need to be moving these infrastructure projects forward. It's, you know, the electricity in your house, the water that comes out of the tap, I mean, that's really critical for anyone, you know, for everyone. And especially in this pandemic time, even more so. I mean, what if it's, you know, 110 degrees outside and you lose your power? You know, what do you do? So, especially when you lose your power because somebody was messing with the system, you know. So,
yeah. I know in California when they have very bad heat waves, they tell everybody to go to the mall. But now it's a pandemic thing. Bottom malls aren't open all the time. People go there. It's pretty cool. They go to the movie. They go sit in the movie and watch the movie in a cool place. They're not opening those places yet.
Well, here they're opening them, but like at 25% capacity. So, and you have to book your ticket in advance. And they're working to space everybody out. But, you know... I know, it's a real concern. And what happens if there's a wildfire and you have to evacuate a large number of people? And you just can't go now to an evacuation center in the high school gymnasium and lay out a bunch of cots. I mean, it's going to be kind of a little nerve-wracking to see how this goes this year. Hopefully we won't have a lot of wildfires. The good thing is that for us here in Southern California, we got a lot more precipitation this year, ironically, than Northern California, and usually it's the other way around. So they kind of have dry conditions, and us not so much. So this is better for us in terms of wildfire risk, and it's much worse for them up there.
I heard Disneyland in Anaheim is going to open up as well.
In July they're going to open up, and I'm not thoroughly informed on the details, but yeah, this is really tough times. I don't know what to say. I understand people need to get back to work, and we kind of got to figure out how to go about our daily lives with this thing and stay safe and protect other people in you know, and we're just going to have to step forward and be careful and be diligent.
No. What do you see as the biggest water issue today in California?
Well, it's really the lawsuits right now between the Newsom administration and the federal government over these biological opinions. And the state actually won an injunction against the federal pumps because they had ramped up their, you know, because the biological opinions approved by the Trump administration basically go for increased pumping out of the Delta. And so in May, the federal projects went with their, you know, their pumping plan, and they were drawing a lot more water out than the state water project pumps were, because they the state ramped down their pumping because the feds were ramping up theirs, and the state's trying to abide by their permit, which is what everyone is suing over. Everyone's suing everyone over everything. But in this particular instance, they're suing over the state permit for pumping that actually resulted in less water for state water project contractors. So more state water project contractors like down here in Southern California, the San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District, joined the lawsuit against the state. Metropolitan is suing the state. And there's a lot of acrimony between the state and the feds right now. And there's a whole other issue that's really esoteric that that it's hard for journalists to write about. But basically, Shasta Dam is up in Northern California above Redding. It's a federal dam. And below that dam, they have winter run Chinook salmon. And what the building of the dam has blocked the salmon from going up the stream. So they have a hatchery there, and they have requirements to maintain river temperatures to keep the salmon that they have there. Now, in the Shasta Reservoir is a big reservoir, and they have this very unique system where they can actually pull water from lower in the reservoir that is cooler to keep the temperature in the Sacramento River cool enough for the salmon to spawn in. And so every year, Reclamation has to give a plan about how they're going to manage the river to meet the temperature for salmon. It needs to be cold for salmon to spawn. And naturally, this has always occurred, but now the dam's there, and so we humans have to sort of work to recreate this. And it has to do also with, it affects water supply, it affects a lot of things. And so the Bureau of Reclamation submitted their plan to the State Water Board on how they were going to manage the river to keep it cold enough so that the winter run Chinook salmon are not impacted. And long story short, State Water Board said, you didn't give us enough information. This isn't good enough. You need to do better. And so that's just yet another rift in the, between the state and the feds. And basically, it really means, taking care of the salmon means less water for the farmers, in a sense. Although no one might like to portray it as fish versus farmers, but sometimes that's what the trade-offs really come down to.
Chris, wasn't there some concessions this week that did give Central Valley farmers a little more water? Not enough, not more, not what they want, but some more?
Yeah, there were some. We had some very odd weather, in May up in Northern California that dumped some rain, and in a sense it improved the hydrology. So what it meant is Shasta Dam, it went from being a critical year to a non-critical year, which when it's a critical year, then it sort of shifts the balance between I could yak here for the next half hour to explain it, but it affects farmers differently, let's just say that. And so by declaring it a non-critical water year, some farmers actually got 100% of their allocation while others are still not getting any more water. And it really ranges from, some are getting 100%, some are getting 75%. And for south of Delta, which is, anything figure Sacramento or south on the federal project, they're getting 20%. And also, I should say, the State Water Project, which includes Southern California, is also getting 20%. So, you know, it's going to be a dry year. And, you know, Metropolitan and other Southern California water agencies are prepared for droughts. You know, 20% is concerning, but I don't think we're going to be back to hauling water out to our trees in buckets from our showers this year. But we do need to be careful, I think, is what it means, because they have water in storage, and I do not hear about, you know, the big water restrictions going into place. But we need to be prepared, because next year may also be another dry year, and then there will be more impact. So it's always a good idea to be conscious of your water use, and don't be wasteful.
Right. So keeping on the fish subject for a little bit, jumping back maybe to the salmon, keeping the salmon habitat we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a fisherman, and you know I like to read, so I read Caltrout's magazine. So they were saying that there's a community effort, I think, to try and reinvigorate the Elk River. Is that something that's in your on your site this week?
Oh, yes, actually, I posted that today, you know. The Caltrout has been very effective, I think, in galvanizing local efforts to restore, rivers and streams and to restore salmon. And some of our best habitat for salmon, it really is still on the North Coast, in the North Coast rivers. And, you know, if you have not been up to the North Coast, which is north of San Francisco, on the Pacific Coast Highway, y'all should go. It's some spectacular scenery and, just really beautiful, beautiful area. And the rivers there are they're the least impacted by diversions, although they have their share of problems. But it's like it's not like, you know, rivers in the Central Valley, which are, you know, pretty much dry by the time they hit the valley floor. They have more water up in the North Coast rivers and really beautiful countryside. And Caltrout has been a really amazing in galvanizing efforts to get restoration, to get dams out, and to get landowners to, you know, along these streams and rivers to jump in and help out. It's actually really amazing. And, you know, Caltrout's also behind this big effort to restore floodplains in the Sacramento Valley. And there is so many people in the Sacramento Valley, farmers, that are so into having fish and birds and figuring out how to use their lands in the wintertime to support, you know, water birds and migrating birds and now salmon. And they've been, you know, figuring out how to make a lot of projects work. So, I mean, there's a lot of really exciting things going on. And listeners who are interested should, especially if you're a fisherman, should definitely check out the Caltrout site. I think it's caltrout.org.
Yep, it is. And their magazine is called The Current.
Yes. And you go right there and you'll see it there, today. It was posted, so.
Yeah. So I see a lot of, you know, headlines on the segments and the regional stuff about Fish Food Project. Any of all that we've been talking about related to that?
Well, yeah, that's where, they found, you know, the delta and the rivers are really what the food web for fish is really, it's really quite starved, because we've channelized the rivers, and it's just meant to kind of push the water out to get it, you know, either it's diverted to the farms or it's pushed out to go out the delta. And, you know, but when the water, as it used to do historically, would flow onto the floodplains and sort of sit there and slowly drain off, and, you know, what happened when they did that is, you know, the bugs, I mean, it's really incredible what nature is if you really understand it. It all starts with algae. I mean, we think of algae as bad, right? You know, toxic algae blooms, and those are bad. But there's a lot of algae that's good, and the algae is the bottom of the food chain. So the water flows on the landscape, the algae grow, and then it just builds up into the little bugs that the fish eat, that the baby fish eat, things we can't really even see in the water. Well, we would see it if we could scoop it up and look at it in a glass. You'd see it. But it's fish food, and that's exactly what's been missing in the delta because we channelized all the rivers and we didn't let the water flow across the land. And so they've really been working in the Sacramento Valley to find these projects where they can let the water flow onto the floodplains and the fish food be produced. I mean, it just happens naturally. Algae and the sunlight create the fish. I mean, it's a miracle, amazing. And, you know, they also have a lot of improvements they're doing on a place called the Fremont Weir that will put water into a flood bypass, which is, you know, land set aside around Sacramento. So when the river gets too high, it floods into the bypass. And so they're finding a way now. They have some projects where they're going to allow the water into the bypass on a little bit more regular basis in the wintertime to provide food and a place for the fish to grow. It's been a decade-long effort to get that done, but it's, you know, there's a lot of good things going on up there. We're finally getting some things done.
That's about time. You know, one of the things, you know, we talked about the cybersecurity at the opening of the show, but one of the biggest problems we're still seeing all across the country is this PFAS problem. But I know that we're looking at spending, at least the government, about $3 billion a year on drinking water remediation technology, and that's going to go through 2030. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I have to tell you, I like to be an optimist, but I have to say the one thing that I've learned with the whole PFAS thing and the whole microplastic thing is that, unfortunately, contamination is everywhere now. Microplastics, they're in the air. They precipitate out in the snowpack. They're in the bottom of the Mariana Trench. These PFAS chemicals are all over the place. You couldn't get away from them even if you wanted to. Cleaning this up is going to be very expensive, and I think it is going to be important, and we're going to have to do it. But it's not going to come cheaply, and they're gearing up to try and figure out, you know, which polluters they can charge for, you know, these PFAS chemicals being all over everywhere. But they're ubiquitous. I mean, it's not just the firefighting foam, but it's, you know, even in the wrappings when you buy fast food, you know, the flame retardant that they put in all the couches or even in the baby clothes, right? Because baby clothes had to be flame retardant. I mean, there was a time when we put chemicals everywhere, and they're everywhere now. And I think we're going to have to clean it up. You know, whenever you ask me this, I've been saying water, it's going to start costing more. And I don't see any way around that, you know, unfortunately.
No, I Chris and I, Baby and I both agreed on that. So, anyway, we're coming up against our commercial time, and Ms. Austin, we appreciate you coming on the show, as we tell you every single week. And for our listeners, please follow her on mavensnotebook.com. Become a sponsor, become a subscriber, a follower. You'll get the most important water news, at least in the state of California, and she covers stuff around the world as well, around the nation. And it's a great site. It's mavensnotebook.com, and we have her exclusively on our show, and we appreciate that. So Chris, you have a wonderful week. You stay safe and healthy, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
You too.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in about a minute or two, and we'll bring on some of our next featured guests. So stick around.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied, fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied, fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Time to take a water break and talk some water. Irrigation. Such a refreshing topic. As more and more markets face water restrictions, your customers may be hungry, or should I say thirsty, for water-saving products. For new installations, add options like drip irrigation, controllers that respond to weather data, pressure-regulating heads, or heads with check valves. They all provide easy ways to differentiate your bids and win more jobs. Or for an extra stream of revenue, offer existing customers upgrades like high-efficiency nozzles, rotary nozzles, or Wi-Fi-based controllers. Because when you help your customers save water, you make a world of difference for the earth and your bottom line at the same time. We'll drink to that.
KCAA.
Well, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Show, and hope you have a great day. For those of you who want to call in and talk to our guests, please do so at 888-909-1050. And if you're out of the California area, you can call us at 909-792-5222. And we'd like to hear from you and so are our guests. So a question that I always ask is, what's better than listening to two water geeks like Chris and I every single week? Well, we got to figure something out that's twice as good as that. So we did. So we're getting another two water geeks who are going to talk about water. And they're going to join us here in a second. And the two gentlemen are just incredible people. And they want to come and talk about their story of what they're doing to promote water and how they can get the word out to people. And, you know, it's not easy saying, hey, you got to educate people and go talk to people and do all of this stuff. But We've got two great guys who are super professionals. They're both engineers. First gentleman is Adam Tank. He has over 10 years' experience in the water industry with a focus on innovation, software, and business development. And he's the director of software solutions at Transcend and has responsibility for client success related to Transcend Design Generator and the automation of preliminary engineering activities. Most recently, he served as the North America Smart Cities Director at Suez. He previously led and sold the robotics spin-out of the General Electric Corporation, which focused on cutting-edge potable water pipe rehabilitation techniques. Adam received his undergraduate degree from Kansas State University and an MBA from the University of Arizona. I'll let Mr. Davey do the next geek, and I don't mean to make fun of that because these guys are smart. And the other gentleman is Jim Loria. So, Chris, why don't you introduce him as well?
Yeah, no geek at all. I consider geek to be a term of endearment, Rob, so I'm not offended, and I hope Adam and Jim aren't either.
All the names you call me, I should just forget about that, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
So, I'd like to introduce Jim Loria. So for those of us who have been in the industry as long as I have, 40-plus years, Jim is Vice President of Marketing and Sales for Maisie Injector. For those of us who know Maisie, been around for years and years, I think 40 years themselves, right? So their products are mainly adapted to water and wastewater issues for municipal, industrial, and agricultural markets, disinfection, sanitation, that sort of stuff, not just in ag irrigation and irrigation in general, but pools, spas, aquatics, that kind of stuff. So let's talk a little bit more about Jim. He's got a bachelor's of chemical engineering from Manhattan College. He's also traveled the world benchmarking best global water management practices. So he did for a while, lived in Hong Kong. And one of the stories we're going to ask Jim about right off the bat, so as you're listening, Jim, get ready to answer this. He did his planes, sure, trains, and automobiles tour of China, specifically visiting breweries, a man after my own heart. As I often tell Rob, the co-host here, I'm really only here for the beer. So
we got to properly say hello to him. So ni hao.
Probably say so. Let's welcome our guests both to our show here. So Jim and Adam, welcome.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
great
Jim.
Great to have you guys on.
Spot and keep my promise here, and ask you to kick it off by telling us a little bit about your China visit, especially your visit to breweries and refineries and water treatment plants and all that stuff.
Sure. So I was living in Hong Kong in the mid-90s, and I was working for a mining company at the time. We were selling filtration products for all types of different applications like brewing, wine. I had the enviable job of visiting all the Japanese breweries, all the Chinese breweries, as we were doing some joint ventures to develop some mining properties in China. And that's kind of how I got to the water industry. I was an expert in filtration of a wide range of beverages. And then in the 2000s, I made the switch to go directly and work only in water treatment. And so it was quite pretty exciting. At the time, China wasn't very developed. And it was kind of just what I said, trains, planes, and automobiles, driving through the mountainous regions. I'm one of the few people that have been looking over the Yalu River into North Korea, because that's where the mines were in China.
Yeah.
And it was quite the time in my younger days.
What, not too long ago, I hope, Jim?
I'm sorry?
Not too long ago, I hope?
Well, it was in the 90s, in the mid-90s. So quite a number of years ago when I was in Hong Kong.
Yeah, still recent memory, though.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so kicking off maybe on a couple of other subjects, maybe we can head over to Adam and say, Adam, what's the most interesting thing that's happened to you in your career?
I too, it's funny, Jim and I share a lot of similar experiences despite having an age difference of, what, 30 years, Jim? Something like that. So
yeah,
we always
yeah.
joke that Jim is the old school water treatment guy, and I am the millennial, new school, everything needs to be digital guy. And so we have some pretty interesting perspectives. But Jim and I share an early career story in that I also lived abroad. So I lived in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And interestingly enough, one of the things I found working in a food manufacturing plant down there was that the water supply coming in off the tap actually ended up being more clean in terms of total suspended solids or, general bacterial load than the bottled water that we were buying used to produce the food. And when we did that analysis, we were shocked. We were shocked to see that be the case. So, you know, don't ever take tap for granted. Let's just put it that way.
Right. All right.
So you guys have come up with sort of a winning solution about how to promote water and all the things surrounding that, and you use LinkedIn and things like that. Tell us a little about that, because, you know, a lot of people, a lot of water agencies, they similarly use the same, not what you do, but I mean they in their realm they go out and promote the way they know how, right, directly to their customers through emails,
right,
and television stuff. But you're hitting it from a little different perspective, and it's pretty unique. So why don't you give us a little detail about that?
Yeah, Rob. So that's how Adam and I really got to know each other. We spoke at a conference together, not together, but separately, and we recognized in each other that we were good storytellers. And so our concept is that it's really Adam's, what he said about it is, if we as water professionals don't tell water story, someone else will. And it's not going to be the best story. So we decided that, you know, we really needed to tell good stories about water, about the value of water. And not only that, but share some tips and tricks of the trade so we could get other water professionals to do what we're doing, what platforms we're using. I happen to use Water Online quite a bit for long form articles. Adam uses LinkedIn. I'll let him talk about that. And what we saw was that we approached the idea of telling stories about water, but we did it very differently. And I picked up some really good tips from him, and Adam's picked up some good things from me. So, Adam, why don't you tell a little bit more about how you're looking at things?
Yeah, I would, like Jim said, we as water professionals have an obligation to share the good work that we and our colleagues do every single day. One of the reasons water, I believe, and we can debate about it, but one of the reasons I believe water is undervalued is because people don't know about it. They don't know the challenges that happen every day, you know, 24/7, operators in the plants, in the field, fixing pipes, fixing leaks, you know, getting dirty, getting wet. It happens all the time, and I think if people had a better appreciation for it, we'd probably start to see some more eyeballs in the sector, and then hopefully that would bring some investment. So Jim and I both believe that if you are in the water industry, you should be sharing the story about water. You don't have to go out and give presentations. You don't have to write, you know, big white papers. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It could be as simple as taking a picture of your day at the plant. You know, let's say there's a great sunset or sunrise, you're out there early, you're staying late, snap a photo of it and post it to Facebook. Let your immediate network know the work that you're doing, how important it is, and I guarantee you, you'll be shocked at the people that reach out to you wanting to know more about the world of water.
Yeah, so go ahead, Rob.
How do you view the U.S. compared to other nations on doing that same thing and understanding the value of water? I just wanted to follow up with that question.
Yeah. So, you know, I worked for Amiad for a number of years, an Israeli company, and obviously Israel is taking it so seriously. They're surrounded by they live in a bad neighborhood, and the people around them, where there's land masses and maybe other potential sources of water, they really can't access. They've got the Mediterranean Sea right there. So they've been very good about figuring out how to do desalination very efficiently. They've looked at how they can reuse as much water. I think they're up to like 85-90% reuse. So, you know, one of the things I like to do in my career has been to travel around the world and look at who's doing things right. And no one's doing everything right, but, you know, Singapore's doing a really good job. You look at what Australia's done in terms of not only how they've treated their water, but how they've gotten their citizens to look at not wasting water, conserving water. So, I mean, we have abundant amount of water in a lot of places in the United States, and we don't take it as seriously as I think a lot of other countries do.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, if you look at it in terms of the, we'll call it the dollar per gallon or dollar per cubic meter of water, the countries that have the highest rate paying base are countries like Australia. And maybe it's out of necessity, but what you're seeing, as Jim noted, is that, you know, utilities like Sydney Water are doing an incredible job sharing the story of what their utility is doing. Look no further than this marketing campaign they did for "Don't Flush Wipes and Pipes." It's well worth going online just looking at Sydney Water Wet Wipes marketing story. There's a brilliant photo of a whale that somebody digitally manipulated to be created out of wipes that look like they've been sitting in pipes or sitting in sewers for years. And they said, you know, on average, you know, the Sydney citizens flush however many tons worth of wet wipes down the sewers, and they're equivalent to X many number of whales. And that's the way that you get in front of people. That's the way that people start to relate to the world of water, is when you really bring it home and you make it tangible for people.
Right. That's the illustration and some way to visualize.
That's right.
Right.
Do you see programs like that, for example, switching from overhead sprays to drip and coming up with something like that? That would be more provocative, not provocative, but more meaningful to the end user or the home resident?
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. I mean, understanding conservation and seeing what drip irrigation can do, you know, one of the trends that I'm seeing based on the COVID-19 pandemic is that more regions are looking to grow their food locally. I read an article the other day about the UAE planning to grow rice in the desert, and that's going to require absolutely drip irrigation, new irrigation technique. You're seeing vertical farms going up now in cities. I had for lunch today, I had arugula that was grown. I live in San Francisco, was grown a couple of miles away in South San Francisco in a vertical farm. And that's going to require innovative fertigation technologies to add nutrients and, you know, not using any pesticides. So I see the irrigation technologies and what we're looking at going forward, I see some really great opportunities because of some of these new trends in the marketplace.
What are some of the successes that you have had doing what you guys are doing every day?
I know Jim is well known on LinkedIn and maybe even the world of water for the guy that posts water quotes. So for 500 consecutive days in a row, Jim would post a water quote a day. And they were quotes from, you know, Da Vinci, quotes from Shakespeare, quotes from comedy films, you know, everything in between. And it was incredible to see the engagement Jim would get on, in this case, LinkedIn, from people that weren't even in the sector that just said, wow, you know, that's actually a really good quote. I didn't really think about it that way. Or, oh, you know, that's hilarious. I didn't think about water in that light. So I've seen Jim be successful at what he calls the drip, drip, drip strategy, which is slow, consistent, methodical posting. I've seen great success in taking content that's been used on other platforms. So it could be, you know, short videos or maybe short stories that have relation to water or relation to business. And I'll post those on LinkedIn and share them with my network. And it's the same thing. You may not necessarily be sharing something about water directly, but by nature of sharing that content, people gravitate to you. They want to learn more about what you do. They want to learn who you are. And when they come to your profile, they see, oh, wow, this person's really interested in water. I didn't really think about water. You know, what's that all about? Or, oh, hey, you recently posted some jobs in water. You know, I'm now on the market. I need to start looking at jobs. And they stumble across the water industry. So we've both seen great success, LinkedIn being a primary platform. But we've got a number of others we've also seen success at as well.
Yeah, Adam's been really good about tagging people. I mean, I learned that from him, where he has a post, and sometimes, again, it's not necessarily a water post. because he's trying to get those weak connections on LinkedIn that aren't necessarily in the water realm, but who we want, you know, he wants to drag in and get them to think about that. So, you know, we've looked at it a lot of different ways. Some of the things that he's done, I've applied, and they've worked very well for me. So that's one area. The other thing we've done is, and we talk about this a lot, is kind of what are the main trends we're seeing in the water space, and then work those down to how do you find some solutions and get people thinking about, hey, I'm looking at this from a global water trend, but these guys are bringing it down into some, you know, little bits and pieces that they can grab from and understand a little bit more about what we do and what our companies do. Because at the end of the day, we want to tell good stories, but also we want to make sure that we do get business for our companies. And so that's part of it, the story as well.
No, Christian and I are very excited when we're doing our show that we bring on people like you. And we've had people from Israeli companies who do the desalination. We've had people who talk about atmospheric water harvesting. We had people coming on who does cloud seeding and vertical farming and things. Those are so unique. I love reading magazines and articles about those things because I don't hear about it in the general news or public. It's not there, and I think what you guys are doing is great because you're reaching a whole new set of people who probably, I'm sure some are interested, but there's some that didn't even know it existed, and I think that's mm-hmm. a great thing. What do you guys both see in the United States, how we can, aside from the LinkedIn and things, what do we need to do as a country, and it boils down to the local water agencies as well, to communicate all these things? I mean, everybody here is spoiled in the United States. You know, for a great country like ours, and you were just talking about that one place, I think it was Rio de Janeiro, where you have clean water, better than the bottled water. They got garbage running around in water here that's contaminated, and yet we don't do anything about it. It seems like mm-hmm. people are living that forever and ever, and we don't address it, or they say they're addressing it, but for years it goes on. What do you see needs to be done, and how can we push that forward?
Adam, why don't you take that answer, and then I've got some. Yeah, I'll take it. So, you know, one of the things we can do is I think the idea of our water utilities being more engaging, and I'm seeing that. It's heartening to see that more of the utilities are being engaging with their customers, telling them when their water usage is higher than it has been over the last number of months, or it's higher than what they would expect for a family of four people in a given community. It's that kind of engagement. I mean, the San Antonio Water Department's done a really good job of getting in front of their customers and engaging them. Adam, you have some other ones as well, right? You have some other
ones. For sure. Yeah, so the one example would be water utilities can do a better job of humanizing the people that work for the utility. So there are a couple really good examples of other parts of the world where when the water utility is there to, let's say, fix a main break or do a hydrant flush, as an example, in advance of that happening, they will send out a notice to customers that will be affected. And it's not just, hey, your water's going to be out from, you know, this hour to this hour, or we recommend you boil your water, you know, after we're done completing this work and what have you. They'll actually include the names and faces of the people that are doing that work in the street. And they'll say things like, hey, Joe and Mary are going to be out repairing this pipe today. They both are members of the community. They're both your neighbors. You know, they've lived in the area for 12, 15, 20 years. They have kids here, et cetera. And it really helps people think, oh my gosh, you know, the water utility is made up of people. And those people are my neighbors. And it's a great way to be able to relate to your water utility in a more human way. The other example I'll give you, because we started this conversation with beer, if you think about successful breweries and why they're successful, a number of them set up sort of local tours of the brewery, programs where the general population can come in, see the operations, see how it looks, you know, taste some beer, and just generally have a good time understanding what the brewery is all about, learning about the culture. why wouldn't we do that as a water utility? Why would you not, you know, open, it could even just be a day a year, maybe a day a month, people in the public that are interested in checking it out, come in, look at the operations, you know, taste some water, see how it looks when it comes in, see how it looks when it comes out. You'll establish trust with a community. You'll get people interested in what we do, and they should start appreciating the value of water, just how difficult it is to treat it.
So or maybe they'll spend a little more time looking at their water bill. You know what I mean? There's a lot of information
right.
on your water bill.
That'll do it.
And you know, I mean, maybe giving a little, at the end of the tour, maybe a little instruction on, hey, this is what your water bill looks like, and maybe you should look at it occasionally.
Yeah. So, can we take that like humanizing idea maybe and just drive it down to the personal level? As you say, I think I heard one of you say, control your own narrative. So, what would the listeners out there, individuals who are looking to learn more, become more astute in the industry, and maybe do something for their own career? What advice would you have to them?
Don't think that what you do on a day-to-day is boring or uninteresting or not valuable or wouldn't be enlightening to someone else. Oftentimes we take for granted the hard work that goes into something, especially in the water industry. And I'm here to tell you that there are people out there that would find it fascinating to know how you isolate a line, fix a leak. They would love to know that process. They'd be fascinated to see how the construction permitting works, how you open up the street, how you clamp the pipe, you know, the amount of water coming out. So don't take for granted the value you bring to the table as a water professional, and just share the story. Again, doesn't need to be anything crazy. A simple photo will do. Just share something small. See if you get any engagement. I guarantee you it's going to be good. It'll be positive, even if it's just a couple likes. And you'll want to keep doing it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good content out there that you can share. You can be a curator of the content. You don't have to be creating it. So start small. Find somebody that you like, that you think engages you as a water professional, and share that so that you can, hey, this person's very interesting. Let me put this out there into my network.
No, you guys are right. I mean, we've worked with San Antonio Water, a lady named Karen Guz. Either one of you know her.
Sure.
Southern Nevada Water. I mean, there are some great agencies, and you're absolutely right. Majority of people do not understand what goes on. You know, all they know is they open the faucet, the water comes out. They don't understand that you have to have people running it all day long, technicians, all of that stuff. And you're right.
Yeah.
I think making it simple and educating, I think that's why, at least in California, the drought that we had a couple of years ago, It was more accepted because the water agencies were trying to educate the people what's really happening and understand it. We're not in the same situation that they had in Australia or
South Africa, right? South Africa, they were going to shut Cape Town. They were afraid they were going to have to shut the city down. They were a couple of, like a month away from running out of water.
Yeah, so we're coming right up to the NBC News Hour, but real quickly, how can our listeners get a hold of you and ask you some questions?
So the first thing is send me an invitation to connect with me on LinkedIn, Jim Boria, or you can check me out at www.mazy.net, and I can connect with you that way.
Okay, Adam, real quick, we got
Adam
about
Tank. Sure, Adam Tank on LinkedIn, Adam Tank, spelled just like a tank. Or on Twitter, AR Tank.
Excellent. Hey, we'll get back to you guys in a couple of days, and we want to talk about some other projects that maybe you've interested to all of us. And we really appreciate you guys coming on and telling us what you're doing.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
The most important things everybody needs to do this week is keep our planet blue.
Planet blue. Good night, everybody.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.